right, it's time to go to school, son.
Come on, get your hands up, man. You need an interpreter. It's time to go to school.
You're gonna lose.
Welcome to the next installment of your favorite podcast. We are the FCK Pod. This episode is fueled by, I'm sipping on Jameson Ginger right now.
Had a little bit of that myself, and I'm drinking like a lightweight. Ooh, I just realized I'm also having gingery stuff. I'm having an Angry Orchard apple ginger.
Shout out to the redheads out there, y'all. Check out the podcast.
What up, Jason Garrett?
Andy Dalton.
All right, so let's get the one correction that we had out of the way. The only thing we had to do was for John Canzano. His Twitter is at John Canzano BFT. We left out the BFT part.
The bald face truth.
Yeah, that's his foundation. Actually, a really cool nonprofit. Helping a lot of underprivileged kids here in the Portland metro area. You know, school systems getting getting a lot of school trips and things like that funded. Stuff that we had growing up that doesn't happen nowadays.
Well, the problem is that the Oregon state, Oregon as a state, their education system is underfunded. They don't have the benefit of a sales tax.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's definitely tough on them. So check that out. Anyway, big shout out to John Canzano. Love
doing
listening to the
things.
Podcast. Or to his, not podcast.
Radio show.
Love listening to the radio show on the daily.
Doing good things for the community, and we appreciate that. What you heard at the top of the podcast is actually our trivia question of the evening. If you know the year that so not only the movie, but the year that that came out, that quote was on the silver screen, then go ahead and tweet it at us. We are at FCK Pod, correct?
Yeah, or drop us a line on Facebook. I got an idea. Once we get our vinyls put together, maybe we'll start giving those out, for trivia, prizes and other things like that. So be on the lookout for that. We'll get that going down the road. So let's get right into it. Let's do some NFL talk.
So this is actually, let me go ahead and get this one out of the way. I apologize. A little more housekeeping. It is Saturday, October the 11th. This is episode 8 of your favorite podcast. And we're discussing news for the week of September 26th to October 3rd.
Correct.
All right. So NFL wise.
So NFL, the one thing that I really, that really caught my attention was none other than Mr. Steve Smith. He had a promise. He promised a lot of blood and guts, versus his former employers, the Carolina Panthers, when they met up. He's now with Baltimore.
This is a nail. Hit him in a coffin. You're dead. We'll take your ass back to Carolina. I show you mow my lawn too while you're out there. Keep it clean.
Keep it clean for him. Make sure you polish his boot as well.
Yeah, Steve Smith, he was always, he had been growing on me as far as one of the guys that I like to get, to hear, either pre-game or post-game interviews. And he really came through, with that prediction. I mean, he's 35. He's as old as I am, older than me. And, he's putting it, putting in work this year so far, only at this point four games into the season as of this recording. His quote after the game, he was quoted as saying, that film is a coaching session. I'm 35 years old and around those boys like they were schoolyard kids. And he did that to the he was targeted 10 times. He made 7 receptions, 139 yards, and he scored 2 touchdowns, including one huge, like, 50-plus yarder.
That's a big day for Steve Smith Sr. And I love rooting for him now that he's out of the NFC South.
Right.
The problem is that he played for the Panthers for so long, and we were subject to those ass kickings by at the hands of Steve Smith Sr. He seemed to always find a way to get about 10 catches for a buck and a half against us. We could have our stat guy check that out for us. Stat guy, can you check that out? Appreciate it. But the point is that he's 35 years old, and Like you said, he ran around them boys like it was schoolyard kids, just really showing them what's up. And I think that's a testament to really grinding it out and, learning how to run really sharp routes.
For sure.
And it helps that he's a speedster, so even losing a step, he's still fast enough to run by your average safety, for example. And he's a lovable underdog. He's been an underdog his whole life, I'm sure. He was told that he wasn't tall enough or wasn't skilled enough. he said, I listened to, I don't remember what radio show it was, but Steve Smith is quoted as saying that he still keeps the newspaper clipping from the year after that he was drafted, where the whatever talking head at the moment had said that the Carolina Panthers had wasted a second-round pick on a special teams player.
Yeah, it was like you said. He's been overlooked. Yeah, for his entire career. I mean, it was, you know, he was never seen as a good receiver, you know, coming into the league. And you know, he's put in the work needed. You know, like you said, he's playing the role of the wily vet, and you know he's still putting in work and doing a great job this year. You know, good on him. You know, and great on Baltimore for giving him that opportunity.
Absolutely. And I kind of look at Steve Smith, you know, like you could compare Steve Smith in the NFL to the FCK podcast in the world of on-demand sports. You know, we're up against big dogs and we're doing our independent thing, and you know, we're 230-somethings as well. But, you know, we're still out there getting it done. You know, we're still a good, you could sure hands, you know, count on us for a possession reception.
An old man playing a young man's game. Some of y'all going to have to ice up.
You know, some of these other podcasts, y'all going to have to ice up.
That's it. After you listen to the work we're putting in, man, they're going to have to ice up for sure. So the next, you know, and I'm really getting tired of this. I'm really getting tired of this crap. So hopefully this will be kind of towards the end of it.
You and everyone else.
You know, so just to hit this part, you know, again, kind of rewinding a little bit, but this is from September 29th. Our buddy, I don't even want to claim that, Jonathan Dwyer, not an FCK pod buddy, was formally charged. There was an indictment publicly released late on September 26th that charged Jonathan Dwyer with felony aggravated assault and eight other misdemeanors.
Eight misdemeanors?
I mean, that takes a lot of effort.
What did you... Yeah, exactly. Like, how do you get eight misdemeanors?
Yeah, I mean, it was just all... I mean, and for those of you that may not recall, this is stemming from the incident where he got into an argument and an altercation with his wife, and then there was also some issues with their 17-month-old child. So this is all coming from that. And so now he is formally, you know, facing those charges. Arizona, actually, what I think, you know, should be the protocol, as soon as those charges were filed, they deactivated him, and they even came out and said, we're not going to reactivate Jonathan Dwyer until this whole thing blows over.
So they weren't pussyfooting around like the Minnesota Vikings were.
No, they definitely were not. And, you know, how much of that is due to the fact that Dwyer is the complimentary back?
Right.
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with that, but at the same time, you know, I think that, you know, at some point you got to draw the line and say, okay, you know, the price of winning is high, but we're not going to pay it to that level.
It's one of those things where the price of winning is always high, but you got to look at it in the long term. Like, is your franchise doing the right thing for the franchise? You know, do you want to sacrifice the moral stability of your franchise in the public's eyes to win right now? And when you're in the case of the Minnesota Vikings, you really stand a chance to make a Super Bowl run this year. You know, why didn't you just do the right thing and handle biz right off the bat?
Yeah, I mean, it's just that situation where, like you said, what is the short-term gain and what are the long-term consequences of that? Because long after, you know, these charges will get resolved, long after probably Adrian Peterson has left Minnesota, we're still going to look back and say, dude, you remember when the Vikings tried to activate Adrian Peterson to put some wins on the board, even though they had, those allegations were hanging over his head? I mean, it's not a good look.
And you're right. It's not a good look, and it leaves a mark on the franchise for years to come. I mean, it's not exactly an easily forgotten offense, and you know, for crying out loud, we're still talking about the yacht party with Dante Culpepper.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, how many years ago was that?
Exactly.
2005, 2006.
Yeah, it's been nearly. Yeah, it's getting close to 10 years, and it's still something that you know, that still resonates, because it was just that bad of a, you know, bad of a thing, and you know, it's a stigma that's gonna stick with that, you know, with that franchise for a while. And it's just, you know, I mean, watch. They're going to end up cutting ties with Peterson after this year. You know, I mean, his contract, his contract is bad as it is. You know, he's got a couple more years, and it's something that, you know, that, you know, especially the way the NFL's going, you can't afford to pay a running back that. No running back is getting paid that much money anymore.
How much is he making per year?
I'll look it up. I'll look it up in a minute, but it's to the point now where, I mean, you look at you look at running backs. I think I don't think there was a running back taken in the first round of the draft last year. You know, so it's definitely something that you just don't worry so much about those bell cow type running backs. I mean, you know, it's becoming de-emphasized, you know, a lot in the, you know, this passing heavy league right now.
Speaking of bell cow running backs, I can really only think of one team other than the Minnesota Vikings that rely so heavily on their running back, and that's the Dallas Cowboys.
Yep,
and DeMarco Murray is really the only 30 carry dude, you know, 30 carries week in, week out.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, look at Dallas doing well because they're doing that. They're finally, you know, letting DeMarco Murray run the ball a lot, and they're relying on that run game, and it makes everybody look better. It makes Tony Romo pass the ball a lot better when he can work off a play action, you know, when they don't have to, play a defense straight up. I mean, it's just, it's smart of them to finally kind of get that figured out.
Absolutely. Took them long enough, but they have a new OC there now, right? Like, it's no longer...
Yeah, they brought in, because Garrett was calling the plays.
Right. Garrett's not calling the plays.
They had him, yeah, they have him not calling the plays, and then they have... I don't know. It's still kind of a mess in Dallas, but it seems like, at least for the time being, you know, things are working out for them. So, you know big ups to them.
Sorry to interrupt. This just in. Adrian Peterson. Thanks, Stat Guy. I appreciate that. We don't actually have a stat guy. It's an inside joke. Peterson is 3 years into a six-year, $96 million extension.
Yeah, so there you go.
The $36 million guaranteed has already been paid by the Vikings, and he is due $11.75 this year.
So he's done, dude.
Yeah, oh yeah. So here's the question I have for you. If you're the Oakland Raiders, do you entertain the idea of trying to make a move for Adrian Peterson?
And I'm already, as soon as you said Oakland Raiders, I started nodding my head yes. To be honest with you, I think probably more than half the teams in the league would probably entertain picking up Adrian Peterson. You know, they'll, because now you'll get him at a discount. You know, now you're going to get him, you know, at a fraction of that cost.
True. And for, you know, a few million dollars, let's say $5 million, you really could invest in a heavy PR campaign to rebuild his image, you know, and hopefully restore his image in the community. I just think it's a poison pill for any organization. So you wouldn't see anyone like, you know, the Green Bay Packers doing that. But I could see the Oakland Raiders, you know, yeah, maybe even the Jaguars, hell.
You know, he could go to the Patriots.
Right. I think we discussed that.
He could go somewhere like that.
The rehabilitation facility that is New England Patriots.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, look at how many. I mean, even just in running backs, and you had Corey Dillon that left Cincinnati on a real sour note, you know, and he was just, you know, he was seen as a big headache and not worth the trouble. He goes to New England, has a couple of great years, and everybody forgot that he even played for Cincinnati, you know, before that.
Right.
So I think
Randy Moss.
There you go. You know, Randy Moss came out there, you know, after having a QB or a coach killer in Minnesota, and then, you know, he did okay. And well, that was after he had that horrible stint in Oakland. So, you know,
right.
I'm sure Tom Brady wouldn't mind. So.
So the Cowboys, Scott Linehan is now calling the offensive plays.
Oh, there you go. Where was he coaching before?
Linehan was the Detroit Lions OC from 09 to 13.
Oh, there you go.
I knew that. Matt Stafford, what up?
Yeah, it's pretty funny, though, that, you know, with Scott Linehan coming over there after being the OC in a pass-heavy offense, he goes into Dallas and makes use of the running game.
Well, I think a lot of that is just looking at, you know, okay, what do I have to work with? You know, it's a different situation, different personnel, and you really just have to play to your strengths. Speaking of different personnel, shout out to Bad Mr. Frosty.
Come on the podcast, man. Get your cold taken care of. Get your voice back, and let's get on this podcast so we can talk about Buffalo.
Holla at your boys. Speaking of which, your boy EJ Manuel is now benched.
You know, this doesn't make sense to me. Because what's the point?
Because I like Kyle Orton's neck beard.
out. You know, you know, even though he has a great neck beard, it just doesn't make sense to me. Kyle Orton is like close to 40. Like, didn't Dallas, when they brought him back last year, he was re-entering the workforce as something. Like, he was getting back into his non-football career.
He was hawking insurance somewhere, sleeping on his friend's couch.
Yeah, he was doing something along those lines, and then, you know, and then Dallas got him as an emergency quarterback. I mean, it's, you know, to me, you know, as bad as EJ Manuel might be, and, you know, he has looked like he, well, you know, to be honest with you, he looks exactly like we thought he would, you know, be, you know, turn out to be
when he was drafted.
Yeah, he's not ready. He's not the sharpest knife in the drawer, and he's having a hard time dissecting NFL defensive schemes, none of which he'll get better at sitting on the bench, you know, holding a clipboard.
I think this move, honestly, I like the move because you bring in a veteran, and it's, you know, it's no loss to you. The risk is definitely less than the reward. If Kyle Orton turns out to be a serviceable replacement quarterback, which he's proven that he is, you know, he's not going to win you, you know, a Super Bowl like Brian Griese did, but as a replacement quarterback, but, you know, he'll get the job done. But this takes EJ Manuel out of the spotlight for a minute and lets him get his head in check and maybe allows him a little bit more time to learn the intricacies of the Buffalo offense.
I guess you're right. I mean, for me, I just figure that they've already kind of set sail in that direction. You know, it's at the point now where, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to have a real crappy season. You're going to have a high draft pick. That's never a bad thing either.
Buffalo's used to that.
Yeah, I mean, you might as well load up.
Sorry, Bills fans.
You know, you go and get yourself another top draft pick, then you're going to load up. You've already got Sammy Watkins, you know, best player in the draft that year.
Man, you know what, though? Sammy's looking legit. I don't know about best player in the draft, like Frosty was saying, but, you know, he's looking all right.
Yeah, he's got, you know, they got Kiko Alonso on the defensive side of the ball.
Isn't Paul Posluszny still there?
I think he's in Jacksonville now, I want to say.
He's in the black hole known as the other black hole, should I, so to speak.
Yeah, he's in the expansion team forever mode, you know, Jacksonville Jaguars. Do you remember when the Jaguars and the Panthers nearly met in the Super Bowl?
I do.
Like a couple of years removed from being expansion teams?
I do. It was Kerry Collins.
Carolina, yeah.
Carolina. That Steve Smith Sr., I believe.
I think
he was on
there.
That team?
Yeah, I think he was. Like maybe his first or second year.
The only Jaguar that I can name right off the top, Tony Boselli.
Okay, I got you a couple.
On that team.
one of the great lefty quarterbacks, Mark Brunell.
Right,
and then
right,
he was
right.
throwing to some great guys. He was throwing to Keenan McCardell. And I forget the other guy, but they had a great duo at receiver. And didn't they have a... Who was the former Florida Gator that they had at running back? It was like Fred something. Fred Jackson, Fred Davis. Carolina had some, you know, always had some strong, you know, defenses in play. But that was awesome. I mean, they were seriously like, yeah, two or three years removed from being expansion teams, and they were getting to like their conference championship games.
1996. In 1996, the Jacksonville Jaguars made it to the AFC Championship game, eventually losing to the New England Patriots. They went 9-7 that year.
And they got to the championship.
Led by Tom Coughlin. How about that? I did not know that.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
So they had wide receivers, your boy, Keenan McCardell, our boy, collectively, Andre Bad Moon Rising.
What up? Former Falcon.
Curtis Marsh, Kendrick Bullard, Jimmy Smith.
Jimmy Smith. That's the other. Yeah, that was your other guy, that tandem, Smith
Yo,
and McCardell.
Jimmy Smith was a fantasy beast, man. Let me tell you.
What
I used to draft
team.
That dude all the time. I was like 13, 14, playing fantasy football time. Like, yeah, let me get Jimmy Smith. Offensive line led
Good
by
times.
Left tackle Tony Boselli.
All-timer. All-timer.
That's
right.
The 96 Carolina Panthers. Here's a name that you should recall.
Didn't they have...
Oh, I'll let you go ahead. Go ahead first.
At running back, was Tim Biakabatuka.
Yes! I knew you would know it.
One of my favorite names of all time. Simanga was his first name. Biakabatuka.
That's right.
You can call me Tim for short.
It wasn't Steve Smith. This was before Steve Smith Sr. This was Muhsin Muhammad.
Oh, who else was it? Who
the
was
the Rocket, dude? Raghib.
Oh, they had Rocket over there. Yeah,
Raghib Ishmael.
What a great list of names on offense.
Right, Mark Carrier. No, not that Mark Carrier. The other Mark Carrier.
Not the DB from the Chicago Bears on Tecmo Super Bowl.
The other one, Nicholls State University Mark Carrier.
What up, Nicholls State? Division II, right there.
Word, man! What a blast from the past. Kevin Green was on that team.
Isn't he like the career leader in sacks?
Isn't he like the career leader in footballs punted when asked to be signed by 9-year-old boys? The answer is yes.
That was so awesome.
What an asshole. He has the most double-digit sack seasons.
Oh, there you go. I knew that he had some ridiculous record when you're like, dude, really? Kevin Green?
Oldest player to lead the NFL season in sacks. 14 and a half back in 96.
Taking steroids. Just saying.
96 was a good year for the Panthers. It was also a good year for rap music. Tupac's All Eyes on Me was out that year.
One of the best albums ever of all time.
Double album.
Yeah.
Double album.
Bangers all the way through, pretty much. We had this discussion before.
For sure. For sure.
Strong album.
So one other thing I wanted to touch on regarding the NFL this week was Hussein Abdullah's penalty for...
Man.
He got unsportsmanlike conduct for an end zone celebration in that Monday... Or was it a Monday night game?
I can't remember. I'll look it up while we discuss it here.
It was the Kansas City routing of the New England Patriots. It was Thursday night game, I believe.
Okay.
41-10, I want to say. Anyway, Kansas City hung one on the Patriots in dramatic fashion. And at one point, Hussein celebrated a touchdown reception by giving thanks to Allah in the way that Muslims typically do by, you know, striking a prayer pose in the end zone. And he was flagged 15 yards for it, which I find horribly insensitive.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it made no sense, you know, to flag him for that. And, you know, here's the thing. After the fact, they said it was because he... like slid on the ground.
He laid down.
So they saw it as excessive celebration in that regards. It wasn't so much that he was doing he wasn't flagged for doing a Muslim, you know, prayer.
So what you're saying is it wasn't the referees doing a little bit of bigotry, you know, against ISIS and other Islamic, you know, groups.
Yeah, I seriously hope not. Little fact for you. You could call him your boy, Hussein Abdullah. He went to Washington State.
Oh, nice. What year did he graduate?
He graduated in... Oh, I just lost it.
It's all good. We'll edit this out.
But yeah, I think the thing was, like, it was... I saw the replay. I didn't see the whole game, but I saw the whole situation unfold. And, I mean, I guess you could kind of mistake it as being a little excessive celebration because he slid like hell. But seriously, though... You know?
I think the NFL needs to come out, and for the record, it's October 11th, and the NFL has not come out with an official apology, to my knowledge. Have they apologized for
the fine?
I think
that they apologized for the fact that they got it wrong.
The penalty.
You know, they admitted that they got the call wrong because it was not, they didn't intend to penalize him for making the prayer pose. Because, you know, the great comparison there is, you could Tebow all you want. And you don't get penalized for that. And you're basically striking a prayer pose and you're kind of, you know, going to the ground, you know, similar enough to what Abdullah did. And nobody even thinks twice about it, you know, when somebody T-bows.
Well, it's a well-known, you know, Christian symbol to strike, you know, fall down on one knee and pray and reflect in prayer. Maybe it was just one of those, hey, what's that boy doing over there?
I think that's what it was. And they just didn't know what was going on, so... he was an undrafted rookie in 2008.
Word. So 2008. Well, who knows if he actually graduated. I'm assuming he graduated. Oh, anyway, so the latest news says nothing towards the effect of an apology, an official apology. All the news is from September 30th, and it's about the penalty and how he shouldn't have been penalized. And my bad, it wasn't a reception. I mean, I guess you could call it a reception. It was a pick six.
It was a pick six, yeah. He housed it, yeah.
How you like that, Tom Brady? Word. So
that was the start of the the talk about the downfall of Brady and the Pats, because they got waxed that game.
They did, and there was a lot of fallout in regards to the Belichick Brady franchise. That, you know, I honestly welcome the new age, you know, the new wave, mostly because I can't stand Belichick and Brady and how successful they've been. Yes, I am a hater. But without spoiling episode 9, let's just say that things have changed.
yeah, slightly.
So moving right along, do you want to get back into our trivia question?
Let's do that. Let's circle back, and for those of you that that haven't been able to get the answer, the that soundbite was from Rocky IV. That was the pre-fight, goings on between Ivan Drago and Apollo Creed, and the year was 1985.
I was 2 years old.
I was 6 years old. I was not at that fight, the Drago Creed fight.
I was not either, but I have seen Rocky IV a number of times.
Great
estimated
movie.
Estimated at 45.
So you may be asking yourself then, why are we talking about 1985? The reason we're talking about 1985 is because that was the last year that our Atlanta Braves had last fired their general manager. So we talked about that previously as, kind of in regards to how stable the organization has been from a managerial and front office standpoint. So we dug up some quick facts for you guys regarding 1985. Your sporting world champions in U.S. sports at the time, the Kansas City Royals won the World Series that year.
Was that the last time they were in the playoffs?
I believe so. So how about that, man? I mean, now they're in the playoffs and looking great. Shout out to Kojak Delta. We got to get you on the podcast. Another Click Nation affiliate member there. I'm going to try to get him on there. He is from the Midwest, from the heart of Royals territory. So he is affiliated by birth, not by bandwagon.
Would you say that Kojak is a KC masterpiece?
You could make that argument. Other champions there. The dominant San Francisco 49ers. That was that era. Yeah, that was that era where they were just filthy good. Bill Walsh had the West Coast offense going
in full effect. But when the West Coast was still new,
right? When nobody knew what the West Coast offense was.
When contrary to geographical location, the Atlanta Falcons were residents in the NFC West.
Yeah, which made total sense there because we were, Yeah, glad that they finally got that sorted out 10 years later.
Bad Moon Rising was on that team.
Yes, he was. Deion Sanders probably on that team, too.
Prime time.
How's that academy doing, Deion? Sorry
Word.
About that.
How's that scandal, Deion? Oh, too soon?
Yeah. Other champions, the LA Lakers. Household franchises and dynasties here with the 49ers and the Lakers. And in college football, the Oklahoma Sooners. Had won the national title, Boomer Sooner.
Word. Back to the Future was in theaters.
Great movie.
Marty McFly, what up? As we mentioned at the top of the podcast, and then once more, Rocky IV.
Great movie, great franchise.
You will lose. I must break you. And one of my personal favorites.
Great, great movie.
Rambo First Blood Part 2, also featuring Sylvester Stallone.
So Sly was big that year.
He was, man.
He was huge, man.
And not like HGH big. He was like naturally big.
Yeah. Well, no. Natural was probably like steroids at that point. That was the 80s. Arnold.
True.
He's getting big.
True. Arnold was huge, man. He was still Mr. Olympia back then.
And check out the Billboard songs.
Yo, I got that up on the computer right now, man.
This is some great. This pretty much encapsulates the mid 80s right here. As far as some of these songs that we pulled off of here. Why don't you rattle off some right quick?
My favorite, my personal favorite, Everybody Wants to Rule the World, was number 7 on the year-end charts.
Tears for Fears.
What up? Also, I'm also a big fan of I Want to Know What Love Is by Foreigner. That was number 4 on the charts.
Another great song. Great love ballad.
Word.
I think Power I remember hearing ballad. That. Yeah, I think I remember hearing that in some middle school dances.
Power ballad. middle school dances where the teacher still had rulers to make sure that you weren't, you know, bumping and grinding.
There you go.
The bumping and grinding didn't come until R. Kelly, before he was peeing on people, though, like a young R. Kelly, like a 95 R. Kelly. What else? Like a Virgin, speaking of R. Kelly.
There you go.
In direct contrast to R. Kelly, Madonna's Like a Virgin, and the number one song on the year-end chart of 1985.
Drum roll, please.
Care to take a guess?
1985. I don't know. I thought it would have been Madonna.
Word, me too. I was actually shocked. It's Wham! Featuring George Michael, Careless Whisper.
Snap. That's a great one, too.
It's not bad. I mean, I like...
But I'm surprised that was number one.
Word. There's so many better songs. Like, Take On Me was number 10.
Nice.
Money for Nothing, Dire Straits, number 8.
That still gets a lot of radio play right now.
Shout out to Men with Mustaches, Daryl Hall and John Oates, Out of Touch. Great song.
Oh, man, yeah.
Synth rock.
Yeah. I still rock Hall and Oates, like...
As often as I can, I rock
Yeah,
Hall and
I mean, it's like, it's probably an uncomfortable level, given, you know, given the decade that we're in now. But at any rate, 1985,
you know,
great year.
Absolutely. You know what was big, big news to me this week, though?
What's that?
Adam Dunn hung up the cleats, man.
Yo.
Adam said, you know what? I'm done. Pun intended.
And I think you posted it to the Facebook page. And come on, man, y'all get on there and mark that page up, man. We want to hear from you guys. Good, bad, ugly.
For real.
Funny,
whatever you got.
Funny. Bring it. But we already talked about that, you know, the Adam Dunn retirement. And, you know, he never made the playoffs in 14 seasons. He did make it, you know, technically to the postseason this year because he was with Oakland. But sadly enough, he did not start. And he didn't get subbed in.
But he made the playoff roster.
Yeah, he was on the roster.
So technically he made the playoffs.
Well, no, because this is a playoffs. This is a play-in game.
But
he
it's
didn't
still
make,
the
play- he man, didn't make the playoffs.
It's the wild card game, though.
No, man, this is the play-in game. This is like the is this like March Madness? This is the 65th team. You're not in unless you win.
You're right. No, I get that, but it's still my argument is that it is the game is played after the end of the regular season. It is therefore the postseason. Play
all
in
right,
or not.
All right, okay.
Play in or not, it's still the postseason because it is not a regular season game.
All right, so in that case, he did make it to the postseason. He never made it to the playoffs.
Right.
Never made it to the playoffs.
There you go. I can live with that. I can live with that.
And apparently Adam Dunn can live with it, too, because he said he's cool with it.
Yeah,
you know, he's
like,
gonna,
you know,
he's going to hang it up. Hang up them cleats.
He's like, I never played in a playoff game. I'll just take the I Got a Lot of Cheese award.
Yeah. Don't matter.
I got a lot of strikeouts, too. What?
Yeah. What you going to do? I got paid a lot to strike out a lot, and I hit a lot of long balls, and chicks dig the long ball.
How clever is it that we alluded to the Adam Dunn and the sabermetrics, you know, on our last episode? And then he goes and retires. You know, I get the feeling that Adam listened to the FCK
I think
episode
he might be,
6.
He might be an undercover listener.
And he was like, you know what? I'm worth more than Tony Gwynn. You know, they just brought this to my attention, which I'm sure has been brought to his attention before. But he was like, you know what? I'm good. I got a lot of cheese. You know, that is my Ferrari parked outside. I'm good.
Maybe we could get him out to the batting cages with us.
For real, we could go like heads up against Adam Dunn. We're still doing that, by the way.
Oh no, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I'm ready. We're gonna get the GoPro, and we're just gonna look silly in the batting cages. But
you're gonna look silly.
I think we're both gonna look silly.
Man,
trying to flail at 75, 80 mile an hour fastballs, though.
I got chops.
I'm just
tell you.
I'm not afraid. Look, I'm not afraid to say I'm gonna look silly. I'm gonna look silly trying to swing at those pitches. They're gonna be coming at me like, you know, like bullets.
I'm gonna look silly because I look silly anyway. Like just day to day, I'm a pretty silly looking dude. So that was a foregone conclusion. Me stepping in the batter's box, I'm gonna look silly no matter what. However, I'm willing to bet a nominal sum of money that I will not only out-hit you, but I will also out-hit Adam Dunn.
We'll try to figure something out. We'll do something. We'll do some kind of goofy dare and then record it and put it on the YouTube channel.
Exactly. So we'll have great video.
Yeah, we need to get some people following. That's going to be some premium content that we're not going to release until we start getting some more guys and gals checking this thing out and interacting with us.
Right.
So give us reason to act foolish. It's a win-win.
For sure. So, Adam Dunn's career stats.
These are awful.
And these are awesome, you meant to say. 237 career average.
Yeah.
So, if you hit four... If you hit... This is out of control, man. You just got to hit 3 out of 10 balls in the batting cage and your money. You're in the running.
Look, man, we're going to go 100 times. You're going to face 100... It can't be 100 pitches. It can't just be 100 pitches because then you got to swing at everything and you're going to get wore out. When this isn't the home run derby.
You don't have to swing at everything for 100 pitches, you know.
I'm just saying, on contact, or should we count like strikeouts too? So we'll say 3 strikeouts counts as an at-bat.
Anyway.
3 swing and misses.
We'll discuss the logistics.
You just
got to
put 24 balls into play out of 100, dude.
Man, I'm going to get up there and bunt.
6 out of 25, man. Come on. Come on. You can get on a streak and lace 3 or 4 in a row. I'm just saying, man.
That's what I'm
saying.
Banking on, though. Like, as soon as you hit one and that confidence hits, like, you're going to hit 3 more that's after
what I'm that saying.
One. You know?
Just saying. 237 career batting average. Tony Gwynn, who he out-saber metrics, hit 338 on his career. I can't beat Tony Gwynn.
Not a chance.
Rest in peace.
Not
I can't
a chance.
Beat Tony Gwynn.
I can't beat Tony Gwynn senior or junior, for that matter.
I can't beat Chris Gwynn.
I can't. I got nothing.
I just pulled that one out. I knew he had a brother. That's about it.
I was going to say Tony Stewart, but I was like, nah, don't make a Tony Stewart joke here, asshole.
Yeah, there you go. Too soon. Too soon.
So that puts Adam Dunn 773rd on the career list. He still makes the top 1,000
there
at
you go.
237.
Career, top 1,000. Good for
where,
you.
Where is Mendoza? Is he right at 200?
I think he is officially. Yeah, he's 200. Line. Yeah, I think that's 200. And I know the Golden Sombreros if you go 0 for 5 in a game.
Nice.
I don't know if you have to strike out 5 times, but I know you got to go 0 for 5. I wonder how many 0 for 5 games Dunn had. While you look that up on Mendoza, his career, this is where it gets good now. His career OPS is 854. That puts him in at 117th career. That's where you start to see the value come out.
854 is really good.
Honestly. I mean, in comparison, Gwynn was 847.
I'm just saying, like, 854, like, I didn't even look at the 847, to be perfectly honest, but the that's damn near 1,000. Like, 1,000 is, like, premium, you know, that's Barry Bonds, you know.
There's a few
OPS.
Guys, and I'm gonna look that up real quick so that we can get some more comparisons. But it's solid. I mean, he's into the top 100 there, so you can see where the arguments can be made there.
Mario Mendoza's career batting average was .215.
Good Lord. How do you stay employed at 215?
He played really good defense.
That's what I'm saying. Is he like, you know, shout out to former Braves. Is he like Raffy Belliard? Like, is he just a wizard at, you know, at shortstop or somewhere where you can afford to let somebody hit 200 and you can't find a better replacement? And you can't find a person that wars better than that? I mean, I'm just saying, dude.
Did you know that George Brett was half of the original story of the quote, the Mendoza line?
Really?
Because so there were two dudes in the field house in the locker room that were giving George Brett a hard time because he was having a slow start in 2010. Oh no,
no
he said
way.
This in 2010.
Okay, I was gonna say, yeah, he retired like
in 1979. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm reading this right off the cuff, but it was a clubhouse joke back in 1979. They were giving George Brett a hard time because he had a slow year, and they said, hey, man, you're going to sink down below that Mendoza line if you're not careful.
That's
Mendoza
it.
Hit 198 that year, 201 at it for his career.
Ouch,
at that point.
That's just awful. But, hey, man, you know, keep getting paid, though. Still on that roster.
Word. So what else about baseball, man?
This is where you see his power numbers come into play. I won't bore everybody. It's 462 career home runs, 35th, you know, all time, tied with a former Bash brother, Jose Canseco.
Smitch.
You know, I had to unfollow him on Twitter. He got real weird for a little while, so I just unfollowed him. Man, he was funny for a little bit. He's not Joel Embiid funny.
For sure, Joel Embiid wins Twitter.
Yeah, Jose Canseco would get on these funny tangents every now and then, so I hit him with a follow, but. Dude, after a while, it just got boring.
Jose Canseco at one point was charging $10,000 for a personal workout per day. Like when he was really hurting for cash there, right about the time that book came out where he basically dropped dimes on like the entire MLB.
Yeah, yeah. Which also screams, I need some money.
For sure, man. You remember when Jose Canseco hurt himself pitching a game?
Yeah, was that before or after he played the outfield and dinked one off his head for a home run?
I think it was the same year. Which
I mean, it's just ridiculous.
The Rangers. Was it the Texas Rangers?
That was the Rangers, man. That was when the Rangers sucked. I mean, they still pretty much suck now.
So Adam Dunn also batted in 1,168 runs. That's
solid.
Pretty boss, man.
I can't do that. Well, no, I couldn't do that.
But he also struck out to the team almost 2,400 times.
Yeah. So third all time. That's ridiculous.
Who's number one? Reggie Jackson. Jim Thome?
Reggie Jackson's number one. Jim Thome, number two.
That's out of control, man.
2,300 times.
But he got a ton of walks, though. And I think that's what the sabermetrics, you know, angle was really trying to highlight, right, is the fact that he's getting on base.
Right.
You know, it's either a walk or a home run with this dude.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what it is. I mean, you know, he's approaching the top 100, you know, for OPS. So, I mean, so it makes a lot of sense. I still, you know, you could not convince me to take him over Tony Gwynn. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. Defensively, I don't think Adam Dunn is bringing much to the table. You know, I mean, he played first base. Didn't he? He played outfield for like a little bit. But then that's, yeah, then he got moved to first base and he started DHing after
for
that.
For real.
So.
Then he went to his natural position as DH.
Yeah, then he went to his natural position as, you know, a strikeout artist. But
so
that's all I got, man.
Tip our hats to Adam Dunn, though. Yeah, you know, great career, man. You've given us great material over these last couple episodes. We appreciate you. You know, let's go ahead and make him an official FCKer, with or without his consent.
Honorary member. Come see us out in the batting cages, Adam Dunn.
For sure. Or at least watch us on YouTube making asses out of ourselves,
yeah, there you
in the
go.
Batting cage.
So,
what else we got? What else we got for the MLB?
That's it, man. That's really, you know, I just kind of want to hit it quick. I did pull up some stuff because we're talking about ugly contracts that the Braves are handcuffed with. So we're talking, of course, in regards to Dan Uggla and BJ Upton. Dan Uggla, we're already in the process of getting rid of that because we cut him outright, and then I think we owe him two more years.
We're in the process of eating $26 million over the next 2 years.
Yeah, so let me pull up. Should we just do average salaries? Yeah, let's do average salaries. So let me pull him up real quick. This is where it just starts to hurt. So, because, you know, this really just illustrates how, yeah, they handcuffed us with these two. How much did you say he made? On average, 26?
No, he's due 26 over the next 2 years.
So he's due 26, so 13 million. So let me scroll down right quick and get to the 13 million range and get you an idea of what that money could be buying us. Okay, so there's Irvin Santana, $14.1 million. I could see that. That's worth it. There's our boy Adam Dunn. He's making $14 million on average. Would have rather had Adam Dunn.
That's
David Price.
Sure.
David Price at $14 million. Okay, that's $1 million more than what we're paying. I don't think he's showing up on here anymore because he's cut. So okay, some names that we'll know. Names that we'll know. Right off of here, Brandon Phillips, $12 million. Hanley Ramirez, former Brave, $11 million.
Hanley was a Marlin, dude.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm thinking, mixing up.
Horacio? You thinking Horacio Ramirez?
No, I'm thinking
another
Ramirez. I'm just way off. I'm just way off base of that.
So this just then, the Shrugla has signed a 1 year minor league contract with the San Francisco Giants. To the tune of, take a guess?
I don't even know what, like, the bare minimum.
Let's just say he's making $13.5 million next year.
That's ridiculous. So, that's money that we owe him, though, right? I mean, there's no way that they would have paid him.
The San Francisco Giants are they're on the hook for $500,000 next year. Well, we're on the hook for 13.
I think they already got rid of him after that. Like, I think they cut him already.
Did they really?
I think so. I mean, it's just a failure.
So, a little bit, to wrap up on baseball.
Yeah, I don't even, yeah. That's, I'm just, I don't want to upset myself by looking at these salary numbers and seeing what we could have been spending that money on. Point is, there's a lot of dead money that could be getting utilized elsewhere, and
Word.
It could cause us to lose some of our younger guys that we haven't locked up.
So let's go ahead and Derek Jeter retired.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah. See you later, Jeets.
Did you see that Oregon game on Thursday?
I did see the Oregon game. Actually, I saw the tail end of it, and you know, Oregon lost.
Big surprise.
You know,
actually, it was a big surprise.
It was.
Honestly.
I mean, let's call it what it is. We did not think that they would have lost a game to one of the Arizona schools. We thought they would have lost to Michigan State.
I said the same thing last year. You know, I was like, there's no way that they lose to Arizona. And hey, lo and behold, Rich Rod got it done last year. This is the second year running. And for the record, I have bet a Oregon fan in my office. And it sounds like the parlay card is a strong bet at this point in the season. I'm just going to edit this out because that's going to fuck up the rest of the podcast.
So, my boss is an Oregon fan. He graduated from Oregon. So after that game, when I came to work on Friday, I just kind of had to play it real cool and just be real quiet.
I would have just walked in, hit him with the Justin Tuck, and then walked over to my desk.
No, because then he would have walked into my office, hit me with a pink slip.
Hit you with the clear out your locker, yeah. And get the fuck out of here.
He would have hit me with an HR slip of paper, and he would have said, "Hit the bricks." He's like, "Here, why don't you go ahead and cut your own termination check?"
You know,
just to rub it in.
He's got to be the only guy, because my joke is the running joke that I like to use all the time is, you know what Oregon and Oregon State fans have in common?
What's that?
Neither of them went to the University of Oregon.
That's true. But he did. He graduated from Oregon.
He's one of very few, I'd say.
Yeah, so he's a good fan. We got to talking about it late Friday, and he just kind of unloaded, you know, because I finally you know, broached the topic, you know, 4 o'clock Friday afternoon. And yeah, he was upset with how poorly they played. Like he admitted that they deserved to lose. And you know, after this is 2 years running now, they're going to get on that Maury Povich show and they're going to say that, you know, Arizona is their daddy.
Man,
it's not Phil Knight.
Rich Rod is their dad, dude. Rich Rod.
That's man. That's 2 years in a row. I mean, that's Stanford's beat them 2 years in a row. Now Arizona's got it 2 years. So
that's what I'm saying. That's kind of, you know, like, didn't Richt have the curse against Florida for a little while there? We hadn't beat them. We lost to them 4 out of 5 years. And check the stats on this and or delete this out of the podcast. But I thought for some reason we had lost to Florida a bunch of times. Or we had trouble with the big three. Anyway.
We did. And that's what got Donnan fired. I mean, and isn't that what got Ray Goff fired before him? You know, it's just that you have to be able to, you know, if you're the head coach at Georgia, you've got to be able to handle any combination of Tennessee, Florida, and it used to be Georgia Tech. Now I think South Carolina is getting in the mix now. You gotta be winning like 2 out of 3, you know, out of those.
To me, it's still Florida, Tennessee, Tech.
Yeah, if you can do that, you're fine finishing second in the division. You don't have to go to the SEC game, title game.
You just gotta
be able to handle those two teams.
You just gotta appease the boosters that are dumping millions of dollars into your program so that they can talk shit to their other, you know, billionaire friends about how we beat their school, whether it be Tennessee, Florida, or Georgia Tech.
Yeah, so staying in the SEC, it got me thinking about Mississippi State, because this was when they were going into the weekend of playing Texas A&M, who was at that point ranked 6th. They had already beaten a then-ranked 8th-place LSU team in Death Valley. So they rolled into Death Valley, beat LSU, and then they were going to be playing Texas A&M, and then they had Auburn on the slate, who at this point was ranked 5th. So my question then was, is Oregon ever going to even play a top 10 team? I mean, let alone, this is 3 top 10 teams in a row that Mississippi State is playing.
Was Michigan State, were they number 7 when they played Oregon, or were they number 11?
I can't remember. I'll look that up. But if that's the case, that's going to be the only top 10 team that Oregon has played so far. And getting back to Oregon, honestly, I was ready to eat crow. I'd be like, hey, you know, give props. They got past Michigan State, and they were looking really good. You know, and then they kind of had the little hiccup against, who was it, Washington or Washington State?
Oregon?
Yeah.
They damn near lost to the Cougars?
Yeah, that's the game.
On a missed pass interference call?
Yeah, and then you figure that, okay, they're going to get that figured out, and then they're going to roll the rest of the year, and then they go ahead and take a game off and lose to Arizona. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing there. I mean, you know, a lot of a lot of outsiders will look at the SEC and say that they play a bunch of cupcakes, and then of course a lot of insiders will then counter that argument and say, look, man, you know, look, sir or ma'am, those of us in the Southeast Conference don't need to play tough out-of-conference schedules because we run the gauntlet every year. Just even look at Mississippi State. LSU, Texas A&M, and Auburn is in their division.
That's what I'm saying. And it's even more true for the SEC West.
Yeah, the West is brutal. If you get out of there with one loss, whoever wins the West will probably win the whole conference, and you just go ahead and lock that up. That's one of your four playoff teams, and it's still, you can still have a strong argument that the SEC is going to find a way to put half of the teams into the BCS title playoffs.
We have put exactly half of the teams into, well, we've won, what is it,
just 90, about all of
90%.
Yeah, we've won just about
of
all
the national championship,
except for the final one where
FSU, yeah, beat Auburn.
Yeah.
When the wheels fell off the bus in the second half.
Yeah. So other than that, it's been, you know, the BCS is owned by the SEC.
Word. And, man, I'll tell you what, though. Mullen's got it going on down there. Prescott's a hell of an athlete.
Dak.
Word. And I love
short
his name.
Short for Dakota.
Is it really?
It is.
Not to be confused with Dakota Fanning.
That's why he goes by Dak.
I would, too, if I were him.
I thought it might have been short for pterodactyl.
Pterodak.
Yeah, pterodak. Pterodak Prescott.
I think we should call him Pterodak Prescott from
we
now
should.
On.
We should. And then we have a little, have a pterodactyl sound drop. So, word. Another thing that got me thinking was that looking at Oregon State and UGA, and I'd always considered, you know, like, because it's not that UGA is bad, and it's not like UGA compares exactly to Oregon State, but it got me thinking about, well, you know, if you're a middle of the road team, is there much difference between what you're doing and what any other middle of the road team is doing? And then kind of comparing that outside of the Pac-12 and going into other conferences. So it got me thinking about the SEC and Georgia, because, I mean, to me, it didn't seem like Georgia was at that level of, like, say, Oregon, where they're always winning the conference and always getting into the automatic BCS bids. So I started looking at it, and the more I looked at it, I won't even get into the numbers. Let's just say that upon further review, Georgia and Mark Richt are way ahead of what Mike Riley has done at Oregon State. So I was just in the wrong on that. So moving on, trying to wrap this up, man. I wanted to make this a quick podcast. Getting back to the state of Mississippi, Ole Miss is under investigation. This broke on October 2nd. And my first thought was, well, dude, that football program is finally going to get busted for all the recruiting they've been doing. Turns out it's not even the football
program. I was going to say, it's the women's basketball team, right?
Yeah, it's the
word.
Yeah, it's the women's basketball program that's under investigation. So they said that there were some violations concerning the football program, but these violations have taken place prior to Coach Freeze showing up in 2011. So his his regime is clean, including that ridiculous recruiting class that he brought in 2013, when he brought in 4 5-star recruits, according to the 247.com aggregate scoring. Love that site, by the way. You know, big shout out to 247 Sports. If you guys haven't checked that out, they do an aggregate service for free, you know, to view all of the you know, college football rankings. So you get a good, look, you know, at rankings overall, instead of just looking at maybe one or two sources. They aggregate a lot of other, recruiting sources, as well as giving their own take on teams. So I thought for sure that 2013 team, that recruiting class that ranked them 8th nationally, was going to be the one that got them busted for some kind of improper benefits to recruits and things like that.
Right. You don't typically hear about it in the women's basketball realm, is the thing that caught my eye.
Yeah, you don't hear about women's basketball unless it's UConn or Tennessee, to be honest with you.
Rebecca Lobo and who's Tennessee? Shamika Holtzclaw.
Yeah. And I think the UConn women's team did get into some trouble, so they were running a little bit of a dirty program there, but that's a dominant team up there, man. Shout out to UConn. Who's coaching up there? Jim Calhoun?
I don't know.
Is he coaching the men's team?
Pat Summitt.
Gino Auriemma. That's the women's coach. Jim Calhoun's the men's side.
Jim Cutter Calhoun.
Yeah. You want to do...
I was trying to look up the Boise State versus Oregon State stats. I apologize. I've been kind of distant this last minute. I was trying to look up this stat because it seems to be that Boise State always beat one Pac-10 team a year, and it was Oregon State for a little while there. But there's no real good recap on the historical, which
is kind
of lame.
One thing that I wanted to look at eventually is to see how Boise State and both Boise State and Washington end up doing now that Chris Peterson is no longer at Boise State, and now of course he's coaching at UW.
He was arguably the hardest coach to replace, and I think it was it you or Mr. Peacock that had said that that because he had run such a dominant. He brought Boise State when they came up against Oklahoma. That was a Peterson team, right? Because Dan Hawkins was there before that. He left to pursue a job. I want to say it like Colorado or something.
Yeah, he went to Colorado. He dropped that awesome soundbite about go play intramurals, brother. But yeah, Dan Hawkins went to Colorado and got exposed.
Right. Well, Colorado was a mess, but they managed to beat the Georgia Bulldogs in their first meeting. In like I don't know how many years, but this was like 2011, I want to say, or maybe it was 2010 when UGA was just freaking terrible.
We've had a couple of down seasons, but not many. I think maybe that was one of them.
It was 2010 because I thought it was right after.
Oh, 2010 was when we had that's the only losing season we've ever had,
right
under Coach Richt.
Word. So.
But hey, let's wrap it up real quick. Let's just talk about real quickly though. About NBA, because we talked about new ownership with the Hawks and Dominic Wilkins wanting to be part of that ownership, and he had recently been named special advisor to the CEO. He was previously the VP of basketball, so I don't know what that means as far as roles within the team, roles within.
So he reports management. Directly to Mr. Koonin now.
Correct.
It's just one of those things where, you know, he gets a different fancy title in the same job.
Yeah, but it seems like VP of basketball seemed like something more impactful than the special advisor. The thing that I got to thinking about was how John Hart was a special advisor, or is the special advisor to John Schuerholz, and now he's the interim GM. So maybe that is a higher title for Neek. I mean, bottom line is, I still want to see him, you know, step into an ownership role, you know, and just get a group together that just buys out and owns, you know, 100% of the Atlanta Hawks. I don't think there's any more question about whether or not the Hawks are going to move. So sorry, Seattle fans. I don't think you're going to get the Hawks franchise. Maybe get somebody else. Maybe get Minnesota.
Milwaukee.
Maybe get Milwaukee. But you're not getting Atlanta. Sorry, guys.
Sorry, Seattle fans. Gucci Mane. And the ice cream entertainment group. I don't even know what the name of this group is. Yeah, rumored to be part of the new ownership group. Face tattoos are not mandatory. I repeat, not mandatory.
How about this Joel Embiid tweet that we were dying over?
How about Joel Embiid wins Twitter, period?
Yeah, and we got to put this on there too. I'm looking at the tweet. Where he showed America, and then it's got a bunch of people doing the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge.
Word.
And then it's got the African child drinking out of a lid from a container, drinking some water. So it just really juxtaposes the two situations there. So I guess the bottom line is, and look at Joel Embiid, kind of subconsciously, dropping some knowledge.
Trying to break the internet with hilarious tweets.
Yeah, and he's being serious about it too. He's like, hey man, be mindful. Think beyond the think outside of your own realm when you're doing this stuff. Think about what greater impact you can have.
Let's discuss the furthering of the Danny Ferry story, because there's been more people that have come out to defend Danny Ferry. I think we talked about Luol Deng had actually come out and said that, he's forgiven Danny for his insensitive comments.
Right.
Tim Duncan was another person that had come out to speak on the fact that Danny Ferry is not a racist.
Yeah.
And the story is still floating around that he was reading someone else's words. We played the call on the last episode, and to me, I don't don't think he's reading.
I mean, I don't think he's reading it, but it doesn't necessarily, it never really seemed like it was him. It didn't seem like it was him giving his opinion on it.
But he is also, he's a good guy overall, but he's not perfect. He's got some African in him.
So, you know, it sounds like, it sounds rehearsed, yes. It sounds like he probably read it and he was just kind of going off the cuff with it. You know, it doesn't sound like he's actually feeling that kind of hate in his, you know, in his heart.
It does. It doesn't seem like.
If you have hate in your heart, let it out.
Clayton Bigsby, quite not to that level.
No.
But I think the issue to be gleaned here is that it did just roll off of his tongue like it was
right.
Regular conversation. You know, and that's the problem is that
he's got some African in him. And I don't say that in a bad way.
Is there any other way to say that?
Well, hey, he made it very clear. He doesn't say that in a bad way.
So Hakeem Olajuwon has come out and said that, you know, Danny Ferry's been calling all the players to apologize. So he's actually taken the time to try to rebuild his image
right.
amongst the NBA elites. And Olajuwon had said, is quoted as saying, as you know, it was a surprise that kind of it's a surprise that that kind of comment is still in mind. Those were not his words. He did not mean it. He was repeating something. I did not know what he meant. I don't know what someone was thinking to say that, but those are not his words.
So in general, it seems like the consensus is that he just isn't that kind of dude.
Right, but I don't know. To me, it sounds like he's you know,
he's got some African in him, and I don't say that in a bad way.
Dude, he doesn't say that in a bad way.
He doesn't mean it in a bad way.
he's just saying, he doesn't say that in a bad way.
What does Red Man say in that How High movie? You know, he's like, bitch. And I mean that in the nice way.
Exactly.
Like, come on, man.
It's like a term of endearment.
Right. I guess Ja Rule made that a term of endearment in the mid-2000s.
Yeah, Ja Rule, you know, Ja Rule's also not somebody that I necessarily want to take advice from.
Exactly. Exactly. But anyway, so we'll wrap on that. Make sure you tune in. We'll be cranking out another episode here quickly for y'all. We got a little backlog there. We had some real-life business to attend to, namely a DJ Shadow concert that was incredibly dope.
Fantastic.
When we would have normally been recording a podcast. The brothers Araki were enjoying DJ Shadow and Cut Chemist performing Afrika Bambaataa's, using his Afrika Bambaataa's record collection, the Renegades of Rhythm Tour.
Incredible. And besides, we're just doing this for free. So, you know.
For now.
For now. Enjoy it when you get it. And we'll try to bring it out once a week.
Word. So check us out. Follow us on Twitter. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and theclicknation.com. And we're looking forward to next episode.
Stay fresh.